Hey guys, this is attempt number three. I'm now trying to host this space with Nahid as co-host. Press TV having trouble with their internet ever since the war with Israel, the last volley. Let's call it True Promise 3. I don't know if we're gonna have speakers come up randomly. Anton, I see you requesting at the moment. We're trying to get some of our speakers that we lost through the mishaps come back. But we're here, like the topic is woke feminism and how it's used to manufacture consent for war, essentially. Nahid, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Claire is going to join us maybe in 10 minutes. So maybe if you go with the question I ask you, because we couldn't hear you, so we still are waiting for your insight and your perspective on the issue of feminism.
What was that again?
So-called feminism.
Oh, so-called feminism. Right. Well, at the moment we only have 22 listeners. We're just building listeners. Can I ask everybody in the space to share the space? We're trying to get Press TV to accept co-hosts, but they haven't yet done so. Essentially, my viewpoints on feminism. I've always thought that the concept of feminism itself is flawed. Because it essentially promotes the idea of empowering women, and I don't feel that that necessarily means the same thing as equality. I think that sometimes feminism's turned into entirely into hatred for men and a denial of reality. And I've thought that from since an early age. I think I had held those views ever since I turned 10, basically. It really did not appeal to me as well how a lot of feminists portray women as actually they portray women as weak because they want to get handouts for women rather than give them equal opportunity per se. They want to give them an extra leg up, and I thought that that was really insulting. But that is there's so much more to say about feminism, like what. After World War II, some would argue that feminism was just a way in which the capitalist class can access more workers. And ever since then, the living wage of a household has been less reliant on one person. Now, two people have to work in order to uphold a house. And this has probably caused a great crash in the birth of the birth rate of women. Because they have to basically be men. And I don't think that that's necessarily great for society. At the same time, I do think that women can, in some cases, be just as good as men, and they are quite capable and they should have the opportunity to, if so, a woman has talent, they should be able to use that talent for good. Like the, for example, in Australia, one of the women doctors found a way to help burn patients by getting a spray on skin. Like, if that woman didn't have the opportunity to be a doctor, then we wouldn't have had that technology. So, in that case, I think that I wouldn't call that feminism. I would call the giving people an opportunity to shine where their strengths are. That was the long answer. So Nahid, take it away. Can anyone hear me? I think I'm the only one speaking because we lost Nahid, so I'm gonna just bring up some speakers while we wait for others. So go ahead, Sir Oswald. I'm bringing you. Oh no, I can't co-host you. Oh, Nahid's back.
I can. Well, the thing is, for the interest of they have tried for years and years to make the meaning of feminism, or let's say women's rights, as empty as possible. So you just go around, you think of the gestures, you think of the As you mentioned, you name it so well, the fake feminism. You just try to fake some level of, let's say, fight for equality. But at the end of the day, what is happening right now, if we want to see it in a global scale, what is happening to women in Gaza has to be the very first priority of any person, woman or man, doesn't matter. Anyone who thinks that their fight is about equality, their fight is about human rights, their fight is about women's rights. You see, there is an incident, a woman in Iran dies, and all around the world mobilize, all the media, all the Western media mobilize to raise the concern and to make it...
And she died accidentally, by the way. If anyone saw the video, she died accidentally.
Absolutely. Like, there is a lot to discuss about the incident, but at the end of the day, we know that that was an accident. And we know that there are so many deaths that is happening in Western countries, including Australia, that indigenous kids and women are dying in detention, and it's not an accident.
Yeah, people are killed in detention all over the world, but the hyper focus on Iran, they just want to manufacture consent for war so that they can kill millions and millions of women, right? Like, the women don't have even a right to live or have life itself in Palestine, but we're not supposed to talk about that.
Yeah, that's not women's rights. That's not something that we have to be concerned about. This is something that you have to see it as some sort of something that is not actually related to you, that is not something that you have interest in. For women in Iran, everyone is concerned. Everyone all of a sudden starts cutting their hair, showing solidarity to women in Iran and saying that, oh, they don't have the freedom, we have to do something about it. And what does the action mean for them is an excuse, the last reason for Iran to go under regime change through any way. Like, if it's via bombardment, or if it's going to be maximum of...
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd like to ask the audience, do you think it's more to be alive and breathe without being torn in half, or whether she can show her hair? I mean, it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. And we haven't even gotten into the Syrian example. You know, one thing I want to tell, as we have more people in this space, I'd like to tell you the Syrian experience, because before we got Al-Qaeda as a president, we were being sold regime change on the basis of feminism. And the media back then in 2011 was talking about how Assad is bad to women. And in particular, they created this persona called Gay Girl in Damascus. Okay, I don't know if you guys have heard of Gay Girl in Damascus. I suggest you Google Gay Girl in Damascus, but it was like a gay girl in Damascus, you know, talking about her experience under the Assad regime and how she's being persecuted. And the media loved this. Like, they were reporting every single one of her blog posts. And then they had, an incident in her blog. She wrote about how she was disappeared by the regime, and they couldn't hear from her for days. And it was, like, all of the journalists were up in arms. And she even had a relationship with one of these Jewish female journalists online. Turns out, Gay Girl in Damascus is actually an American guy that's living in Scotland.
No surprise. Wow.
No. And it was a scandal when it came out. It was a big scandal. And the thing is that, This is all of the CIA operations, okay? This is basically the carbon cutout. Like, they couldn't find a gay girl in Damascus. So they didn't think that they didn't think they'd get caught because they didn't think that the Syria would last as long as it did. But his name is McMaster, Thomas McMaster. Who's 40 years old. It was one of the most funniest things. But this is another example of how woke feminism is used to manufacture consent for war. So Naheed, as a co-host, we have people with their hands up. I'm going to let you take over and get them to choose to come up if they want to.
Yeah, sure.
And by the way, guys, Naheed works for... Shall I tell them who you work for? Or
yeah, no worries.
Who you are? Introduce yourself.
Well, I work for Press TV. I'm a geopolitical analyst, but also the host of the Twitter Spaces. But today we were having some technical issues. That's why Syrian Girl has saved us, and she's hosting this amazing Twitter Space, which I'm really enjoying more than my program, because here I'm not the main host, so I'm not stressed, so I can actually talk about how I feel about the almost the anniversary of so-called woman life freedom and the current situation in the region.
You're living in Tehran, right?
Yeah, I am.
I hope I haven't revealed the secret.
I was going to say the contradiction in the story that you mentioned about the girl in Damascus. It also happens a lot. It's a very common story in Iran when it comes to the heroes, when it comes to the title, the news titles. You go to the story and you find out everything, every single thing about that story that has become the title is an absolute lie. So we are used to it. Unfortunately, we are used to it so much that you have to think twice at least when you hear anything from West Asia, especially the countries that are supporting the Palestinian cause. Yeah, I stop here.
Shall we go to the hands, Naheed?
Let's do that.
Dr. Houtha and then Saeed.
Yukran, ya Syrian girl. Ahlan sahlan, Nahed. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, I've heard your discussion, and it's not something new. The West has always been very insulting to the West Asian area by telling us how and, you know, how to treat our women and how our women should wear and how our women should not wear. And it's absolutely insulting. And it's coming from these woke people that have absolutely no morality whatsoever, low people, disgusting people. And it is absolutely hilarious when I hear someone that is, I'm going to be very clear, when I hear somebody that is changing the sex of a child, changing the genders of a child, coming to me and telling me how women should act and how women should not act. I think you should leave your children alone, first of all, and stop hurting the children in your own country before you tell us how our women should be treated. You know, I will tell you a story of in where I live. You would see women wear, you know, different types of clothes. You'll see women that wear the hijab, you know, older women that might be even more modest. And you would see women that wear normal Western clothing. There is no code of dress. However, if you are a woman and you wear whatever, you know, any of these kind of types of clothing, either it's very modest or not very modest, nobody will notice you. You're just a woman walking in the street. However, in many parts of the West, in the United States, if you go there wearing a hijab or wearing a modest Muslim woman clothes, they would look at you as if you are an alien or you are not accepted or you are, you know, wrong. They will pressure you to actually tell you what to wear and pressure you to not wear what you are comfortable with. So, I mean, it's ironic that they are the ones telling us what we should do and how to wear when they are the ones, you know, also saying that people should not tell women what to wear. So it's actually very ironic. It's very disgusting.
They only say that they're very selective, however, sorry to interrupt, but they're very selective about when they say that. For example, they don't care that women in Idlib province that was run by Jolani and Al-Qaeda were forced to wear, covering. They don't care about that. It's only in countries that they want to target for some kind of regime change or attack. But Dr. Huda, before I go on to Saeed, I want to ask you a question. I know that a few years ago, Saudi Arabian women were not allowed to drive, and now they have been allowed to drive. The question is, has the number of car accidents gone up since Saudi women have been allowed to drive?
Look, I'll be extremely open with you. In the past, when it was non-women driving, I think it was a testosterone NASCAR hell. All men, it's like you're riding horses or something, and it's very competitive, and everybody got to get out of the way, and everybody, wants to. But I think when the females came into the riding scene, I think it became a little bit more softer. Some chivalry came into it. You become a little bit more respectful. It's not a war anymore. Actually, you would be surprised. I am surprised. But when women came into the driving arena, the accidents went way down. Another reason is because the laws were extremely strong. I mean, they put very strong laws, and they implemented them very much. Before in the past, maybe you speed a little, maybe you park in the wrong spot. It's okay. They weren't really implementing it that much. But now you cannot flinch an eye or do anything wrong, and you'll get a ticket. And that was to protect everybody in the street and the women. So all of that combined together, I think it is much, much, much different. It's actually a positive.
Okay, so we'll go to Saeed now. But afterwards, I want to focus on, I've changed the title of the space to Ask an Iranian Woman Questions. So we want to focus on maybe posing some questions for Naheed. But first, go ahead, Saeed, and then Sir Oswald, and then we'll make it more focused on asking Naheed questions.
Yes, Siringer, I'm an engineer and I'm a teacher in the United States of America. I have known you for at least 15 years. I appreciate your activism and political activism in this space. We have something called Akhundis. 20 years ago, Mr. Professor Ahmadinejad said that head covering shouldn't be our issue. We have more important issues to deal with. But unfortunately, superficial people like this religious sect in Iran try to make some liberal values on the opposite side an issue. And these people thinking that protecting this regime is the most important thing in the whole world. But Iranians have long...
At the moment.
I'm not... You don't hear me?
No, I hear you. But unfortunately, protecting your state is currently the most important thing. Right?
Because I don't agree.
Otherwise, you're going to...
Mr. Ahmadinejad,
do you want to end up like Syria?
No. Especially these Akhunds sacrificed Syria and Libya and Lebanon for their own cause. They said they intervene in the war when the Israelis enter Gaza, and they didn't keep their promise. If these people who sacrificed everything had kept their promises, Gaza would be not like this. They, Iran says, look at what they're doing, not what they're saying. These people.
Do you think that Iran is next?
Yes, of course, Iran is next. But it's the stupidity of Akhund that made Iran next. If they were smarter and listened to Professor Ahmadinejad when they entered Syria, they would took every Syrian next to the table and negotiate a national unity, we would not have this situation, sectarian war in Syria, and would not have Jolani taking over. This is the stupidity of Akhunds in Iran that caused this problem in Syria. And you have to realize.
I will say that they shouldn't have made an agreement with the Turks in, what was it? What was it called? Astana. I think the Astana agreement was a terrible mistake. Because Iran agreed to stop the war.
I think insisting that Assad should stay was a mistake. They could create a national government, and that would be more stable than this current situation. I think.
But my friend, do you know what happened to the Ukraine example? Because in the Ukraine example, they didn't stick with the former president of Ukraine after the Maidan revolution in 2014, But look, the result was the same, my friend. Like, the president was removed, but the result was the same.
Look, the imperial power, the superpower, has this policy to divide and conquer. They made an issue of the language in Ukraine and created this war. Basically, they made a coup in 2014. And Ukrainians paid for that coup that United States made in. They tried the same coup against Professor Ahmadinejad around the same time that they made that coup against Ukrainian people. United States is the using color revolution against dictators as a tool to divide and conquer, and you guys fell for the.
But please understand what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say in Ukraine, after the color revolution, the president then stepped down very quickly. But the result was the same. So even if Assad stepped down early, I'm saying like Ukraine, the result would have been the same.
No, Assad shouldn't say quickly. Assad should have stayed until a national unity government would be established. And that's more stable than the sectarian Shia government. What I'm saying, Iran made a mistake.
He was Shia, he was secular.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Babai, for 1 second, please.
I'm like, shut the fuck up, bro. Listen.
If you know, we're going to talk to fucking Monica. Please wash out your. Excuse me. We have to. Yeah. Right now, Claire Daly is trying to join in, but I wanted to ask Syrian girl, can you see her on the list?
I actually can't. I will send her an invitation directly. Sometimes, yeah. Twitter just sucks like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Claire so Daly. What do you know? What's her at?
She is not. It's Claire Daly. Like the handle is Claire Daly IRL.
Yeah, tell me what. How do you spell Claire? C L A R E.
Give me 1 sec. Let me go there. C L A R E D A L Y I R L.
Okay, I can't. She needs to follow me so I can DM her. Let me see if she does follow me. Claire Daly. There she is. She does not follow me. So she needs to follow me so that I can send her an invitation by DMs. Can she do that?
Well, I think she is hearing us. But I already sent her the. Claire, can you please follow Syrian girl so she can invite you as a speaker, because I am co-hosting, so I can't.
Because I can't DM her invitation.
I know. That's the issue of Twitter. So hopefully she can join in. Anyway, Syrian girl, you can go ahead.
If it helps, Mick Wallace follows me. And we follow each other. If that gives me the street creds, Mick Wallace and I are already following each other. Can you message her? Because I don't have her.
She followed you.
Oh, she followed me. Ooh, fancy. Okay, let me check. Okay, yes, it says followed now. Okay, let's see. I'm so happy and proud. Invite by DM to Claire Daily. Okay, now the invitation should be sent directly. And I don't see her in the speakers yet, but if I do not, then it may be she has to restart her app.
But did you invite her as a speaker, or did you just invite her to join?
Oh, good point, good point. How do you invite as a speaker? Share via... How do you... Okay, wait. I think I can figure it out. While I try to figure it out, you take over the space, Naheed.
No worries. Sure. So I was barely listening to the conversation about the internal affairs of Iran. I don't think...
No, but he made some good points about the external affairs. I will say he had some good points.
Well, if you were listening better than me, maybe you are the better person to make points.
I think that we need to, but we moved to the conversation. We moved it to Syria and Gaza. I think we have to stick with talking about feminism. I think he's saying, essentially, if I can sum up his argument, it's that too much focus was put on the headdress, and he's a supporter of Ahmadinejad. And he's saying that whilst they put too much focus on the headdress, they didn't put a focus on the more important things, which was security and joining the war in Gaza, which he says was promised if the invasion of Israel began. So this is his criticism of the Iranian government, essentially. Sir Oswald had a problem with him, and that's where some of the bad language was coming from.
All right.
Anyway, we're gonna move now to. Go ahead, Naheed. I'm gonna try to get Claire Daly up here.
Sure. No worries. Well, the main reason for us to be here was talking about the. How the West is reacting very selectively when it comes to, let's say, human rights in general, whether it's about women's rights or anything else, even environment. So they decide when and how to support and to make it a bigger movement or maybe an excuse for regime change. So it depends. It really depends. You wouldn't consider the women's right as strong as when you're discussing the issue of genocide, mass murdering of women in Gaza. And when you talk about women's rights, when it's about, let's say, Afghanistan or Iran. So it depends how they... interest, they have interest in that topic. And it's very striking. It's not a very simple thing. We are used to having this some sort of expectation from the Western countries to care about human rights, to care about environment, to care about so-called progressive values. I remember Mick Wallace, actually, he was in this very important speech in Soap Festival. He said something very interesting. He said, the Western powers are not looking for the values. They're looking for their interest. So wherever they see their interests, they come in and they make a huge thing from small or major issues. And if it's about ethnic cleansing of women in Palestine, no problem. We support the genocide, and we are there until the last drop of the blood of Palestinian women. We do not care about how many children are being beheaded and killed. But when it comes to one issue anywhere else, especially in Iran or even Latin America, anywhere that Western imperialism, the Western powers, see a point that, oh, maybe that can be an excuse for us to bring regime change now. And day by day, it has become even more clear, right? We had the first day of 12-day war in Iran. The very first day, the president
Let's play. I'm in the streets of Paris right now. Like, I am in a little bit, what do you call it? In a precarious position because I'm an Arab man standing in the streets. Like, you know, yes, in the middle of nowhere, yes, like, you know, waiting for you guys to talk. So let me put my point on the spot. Can I do that, please?
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Number one, listen. You cannot put, woman, life, freedom, whatever your other stuff you want to have, the Persian resistance or whatever you want, with the Palestinian resistance, which is, I'm not going to say it's a real resistance, but it is much more fucking dire because these are people on fucking genocide. You're nobody's trying to fucking genocide you, man. Nobody's
excuse
trying
me,
to
you have to watch
the can you just, can you stop? Okay, we're going to remove the clown.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's a Zionist. All right. I'm going to just remove him from the actual space completely. Okay, next. Next. Listen, Claire is trying to join. She's struggling to join. Says you're having connection. I'm having connection problems. Oh, dear. Even I'm having connection problems. Sounds suspect, if you know what I mean. Okay,
exactly.
Let me just...
this is what I was going to say. Like, why all of a sudden
yeah.
have connection issues? When it comes to Iranian women.
Right? Like, it's almost like Iranian women aren't allowed to speak.
If Masih Alinejad was here, there wouldn't be no issue.
Yeah, precisely. No, let me see if I can fix that. Nahid, continue. See what you can do while I'm going to try to get the Wi-Fi working.
Sure, no worries. I go to Saad Iqbal. Please, we do not use any bad words here. If you have any criticism or any points to make, you are welcome to do so, but please watch the language. Thank you.
Sure, Naid. In fact, I'm one of your neighbors from the east. So I've been also working on this decolonial feminist theory, and I saw your work and your activism here on this app. So my question regarding the Iranian society is that I got brainwashed when I read Arash Azizi and his work. It was not quite what the reflection of the actual Iranian society. So how would you explain Iranian society through the lens of an Iranian woman to someone who's not in the global north, but rather in the global south, getting influenced by the propaganda of the global north?
Thank you so much, Saad. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name okay. I apologize if I'm making a mistake.
Correctly.
No worries. Thank you so much. Well, I would say, to be honest, it's a very good question to ask because the very first issue we are confronting right now is that even our neighbors, even people from West Asia, or let's say just Asia in general, they see Iran or any other country with the lens of Western propaganda. The way they are operating is that you want to understand how is Iran doing, you want to understand what's the situation of Iranian women, or any other questions you have, come to BBC, come to different kind of Western propaganda machines. And we are here to tell you what is the situation. You don't have no other options. Even the there are so many other sovereign countries that they rely on Western media when it comes to the questions and the findings of the current situation in different countries. If I want to know about Iraq, I do not have to go to Western media to find the answer, or Turkey, or Pakistan, or India. There has to be organic links between these countries. And if there is none, it has to be made. So one of the reasons at Press TV, we are trying to establish such a platform is that for us, for people of Global South, as you mentioned, we are here to talk to each other. There is a freedom of speech for us to talk to each other, to exchange ideas and to ask questions and to be very honest. And at the end of the day, this is the regional relations that we are looking for, all of us, because the benefit, the national interest, the regional interest even, everything is rooted in the dialogue that I am having with you.